Blog Talk Radio.
Ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to The Backyard. This is Margaret Marshall, your host, and I want to welcome you since we're done with the Christmas holidays and looking forward to the New Year's. I just want to say I hope you had a marvelous time. You're all safe and sound and warm and not stuck any place because of the weather. Because tonight we need you to be just chilling, and no matter what the weather is like where you are, we hope that you can transmit yourself to your favorite chair that you were when you were in Jamaica, just chilling and having no problems, man. So whatever the problems are that you might have experienced this past week, and I hope they were few, they will just sort of just drift away with the trade winds. Because tonight we're going to relax, just reminisce, and we're going to be enlightened about some interesting people from the past. And if you are on my list, you will know that tonight, oh, we had just a marvelous time last week. Let me just talk about that a little, because we had a lot of participation from our listening audience, and I just want to thank everybody for their support as we talked about what we missed most about our Christmas celebrations. The ones that we had when we were growing up, or if we just visited the island, or just thinking about it brings us joy and keeps us warm. So tonight we're sort of done with the holidays per se, but we're going a little further to talk about some very interesting people that you may not be aware of. And this information is brought to us by one of our favorite historians, Dr. Joy Lumsden. And the information I'm going to be sharing with you tonight can be, you can get to it by going to jamjoy.info, I think, /history, February 2004. She's just doing a marvelous job at bringing to light and life things that we may not know about. And I want to read you from that particular page what she says. I hope this site will be helpful in making the people I have written about better known to today's Jamaicans and to others interested in Jamaica's history. And I'm always saying how, you know, when I was growing up, I wasn't particularly interested in history. It didn't seem to appeal to me, and we never had this kind of information to research or study. Most of what I use from Dr. Lumsden pages, she has put together, you know, with really a lot of research. And I want to read you something else that she mentions, because it's really important to who we're going to be discussing. And tonight I'm going to be talking, she did a whole month on this particular History Month of interesting people that she hopes that will be, they are important. They were important during that time. And I think that, you know, they're important to us now. And it's only a pity they didn't write about themselves. So I'm encouraging all my listeners to encourage their elders, and just, you don't have to be old or seniors. Just make sure that you're leaving a part of your history someplace. And the best place to have it is in cyberspace. So with that said, I'm going to read you another portion that she shares on the page, which I think is important to us. Note, reuse of terms. In Jamaica, at the period during which the people shown on this site were living, it was unusual to describe people who were or appeared to be of pure African ancestry as black. Those of mixed or racial ancestry as colored, those who were apparently of European ancestors as white. So it was not, as we would say in today's world, it was not politically correct to describe anybody by their race during that period. So it was, once you heard a name, it was hard to know, it was difficult to know what the person looked like unless you had a picture. Now, one of the problems, I'm reading from her, watch her page again. One of the problems of research in this period is that of identifying the racial origins of people mentioned in the sources. Then it was most considered polite or proper to mention color or race in most public situations. Surnames also are of little help, as, for instance, a person with the surname Williams could be equally English, Welsh, African, Chinese, or Indian in origin. And surnames which were clearly Jewish in origin could also belong to black, white, and colored Jamaicans. Now, Robert Love was a great help in his regard, as he used colored terms, especially black and white, without any since he wanted people to be proud of their color. The other factors that help with identification of racial origin was the increasing use of photographs in the press as the first decade of the 20th century progressed. So because of the pictures, and she has beautiful pictures on her website of all the men and women that we're going to be discussing tonight. And she had a whole month of these interesting people, and I am going to be bringing them to life for our listeners, because I think it's just so interesting to read about, you know, the people, what they did, and a lot of people are going to be able to relate to some of these names, because sometimes I wonder, even if generations way down might have some of this information or know about it, because these people in particular did not write about themselves. And from what I gather, she put this together from articles in the newspaper and obituaries, things from different publications. So Now, she has a general comment here. She said it was a common pattern for young men to become druggists or pharmacists, then go on to become doctors. Sometimes it was sons of a pharmacist, like Harold and Ludlow Moody, who trained as doctors. We Jamaicans are very familiar with those names. In addition to the men who went to Canada and Scotland, there were many who went to Howard University between 1890 and 1914. At least 21 Jamaican men graduated there as dentists and 7 as doctors. So in the meantime, I want to tell my listeners on the board that you're always welcome to hit 1 on your telephone, and that indicates to me that you want to join the Labrish and join the conversation and interact and put in your 2 cents. I call the little things I say my sidebar. So you're welcome to join me. And if you have some information about these names or these people, we would love for you to share it with the rest of the listeners and the world. And incidentally, Dr. Lumsden is always asking for comments and asking people if they have any information concerning anything she writes about, please get in touch with her, because she's always hungry for more information. So we're going to be discussing the people in the medical profession tonight. And the reason I chose this is because I don't know if our listeners, all of our listeners, might have seen the email or read someplace about the research team that has been having a lot of publicity, Jamaicans and Jamaica, because of a discovery there for a treatment for cancer that is derived by one of the plants that have a special name. It's the ball moss, but we know it as the old man's beard. I don't even remember what it looks like. So if any of the listeners on the board remember what this plant or bush looks like, please let us know, because I'm sure that the rest of the listeners who may come by later on may just be interested. But this was recently announced that there's definitely been clinical proof that the extraction from this particular plant or bush, I'm not sure what it is a powerful anti-cancer compound can be derived from it. And, of course, they're working to make it available on a mass level. You know, there's a lot of negotiations going on, but it has definitely passed all the tests that they've put it through. And I think we all know that, or not all, but everybody knows that there's a cure for most everything in nature. And we are just blessed to have a lot of it in Jamaica, because, you know, we have always been having, from some of the shows I've done that goes way back to slavery, you know, the slaves were treating the masters and their children with ease, because they know that these people knew what they were doing and that perhaps what they were using was very good. It might have been all they had available to them at the time, but it certainly was quite popular. So I'm going to, again, let the listeners on board know, just hit one on your telephone when you want to join the Labrish. But I'm going to start off with Dr. James Edwards. And it's so interesting to me to read about these people and their families because, you know, in today's world, young people seem to think that they have so many challenges. And as I read about these people and the times they lived in, I know how much more difficult it must have been for them to get things done, like traveling. Now, you know, you think of all the people that were stuck in the airport, and it's like the end of the world. Can you imagine getting from Jamaica to England in 18-something? I mean, with on a one of those ships, especially for a woman. So, need I say more? So let me tell you now about Dr. James Edwards. He was born in Ulster Spring, Trelawney, in 1865. He was the sixth child and the fourth son of the 13 children of William and Mary Edwards. His father did business at Ulster Spring and owned a considerable quantity of land in the district. He went to Stewart Town Baptist School, where his teacher was the Reverend S.J. Washington, a widely respected and gifted Black Baptist pastor. From 9 to 18 years old, he received further tuition from his brother, J.B. Edwards, who had passed successfully through Calabar College. His first job was as copyist in the St. Anne's Bay District Court's office, where he stayed for 3.5 years. In 1883, he left the island for Panama and worked for Cuba, C-U-L-E-B-R-A, Cut. That's a company, I guess. In 1887, he returned to Jamaica and qualified for matriculation in Bishop's College, Montreal, to study medicine. He entered the college in October of the same year. In his first year, J.J. Edwards won the Dissenter's Prize and took first place in every subject but one. In the second year, he won the year prize. He also came top in every subject and clinched his hold on David's scholarship and medal. In his third year, he carried off the scholarship and medal. In his final year at college, he carried off the three gold medals, and came out ahead in every subject of the graduating year. He received his diploma as Doctor of Medicine and Master of Surgery. Dr. Edwards thus won 5 out of 6 prizes and medals, thus establishing a record which had never been beaten at Bishop's College in its 40 years of existence. And I am just telling you, I have to take a break there. But remember now, this is a man with 13 brothers and sisters. And he goes off to college on a scholarship and just tears it up. I'm telling you, you know, when you have drive and ambition and tenacity, and it just gives me thrills when I read about people who just seize opportunities and really go for it. And I'm really hoping that some of the young people all over the world, but especially Jamaicans, will take some of these stories and really find something in them that will really encourage them and motivate them to be the best that they can be. Because we're talking about times when it was very difficult to get anything done. And you can imagine this young man going into a country where I'm sure there weren't a lot of people that looked like him. We're talking 18, whatever. I mean, and he, if you go to the website, he's a very dark complexion. So I'm sure he stood out among all the other students that were there. It doesn't say much about, you know, what the college was like and all of that. So let me, call us on the board. Feel free to, you know, this is a casual conversation. Remember, we're in the backyard in our easy chairs feeling the wind blow over our faces. We're not, you know, in a debate or... really, we don't have to be politically correct. because I am just having fun as I do this. And most of the times I can hardly see or pronounce the words, but I know you know what I mean. So let me get back here to this just cool Dr. Edwards here. And if anybody know anything of him or maybe from that district in Trelawney or heard of him, do share that information with us. Okay. On returning to Jamaica, he practiced in Spanish Town, where he established the Governor Olivier Sanitarium and the Nurses Training School, which was opened by His Excellency the Governor in 1906. 110 nurses were trained at the school. He was a member of the St. Catherine Parochial Board for 8 years and also found time to give popular lectures on health at the St. Catherine Teachers Association and regularly addressed the children of the government school in Spanish Town on various topics. He visited England in 1909 for special studies in ear, throat, and mouth disease and was clinical assistant at the Moorfields Eye Hospital, City Road, and also at Gary's Inn Road Nose, Ear, and Throat Hospitals. I suppose that was in England. I'm not familiar with those places. Later, he moved his practice. No, I'm sure it was Jamaica. Later, he moved his practice to St. Mary, where he was also active in local affairs. He was acting medical officer of health for Spanish Town and adjoining districts, and also for the district of St. Dorothy in the parish of St. Catherine. Later, he was medical officer of health for the Bagnalls and retreat districts of St. Mary. He played a major role in fighting a mild form of smallpox epidemic in 1920 in St. Catherine and St. Mary. In 1919, he was honored by McGill University in Montreal, who conferred on him an MD ad undum degree and honoris causa, Sayre, USA, the only doctor in the West Indies to receive such honor. In the same year, the Royal Institute of Public Health, London, England, at a meeting of the council, unanimously elected him a fellow of the institute. Horticulture was one of his hobbies, and he contributed regularly to the St. Catherine's show. And on one occasion, he carried off 12 first and 2 second prizes. He acted as president of the St. Catherine Agriculture Society and on several occasions was a judge at the Hope shows. Now, we Kingstonian knows that Hope, they're talking possibly about Hope Gardens, which is still a beautiful botanical garden. So that is the story on Dr. Edwards. So with that said, I am going to ask if any of the listeners on the board would like to weigh in on this marvelous man, or if they ever heard or know of any of his descendants from that period. Of course, you know, that's a long time ago, but sometimes there are people who who know about their relatives and will, you know, mention it. So anybody wants to put up their hand at this point before I go on to the next medical person? No? Okay, I don't see any hands. So we're going to talk about, oh, incidentally, he was mentioned in Who's Who in Jamaica in 1926, and he listed his recreations as hard work, intense application, and horticulture. So that was his description of himself. Now, the next doctor I want to talk about is Dr. Robert Stimson, S-T-I-M-P-S-O-N, and he was born in Manchester in 1868. He received his early education from the Reverend C.L. Barnes, a black Anglican clergyman. He left school when he was 14 and worked in his stepfather's shop until he was 19. But he continued his education by studying after the shop closed at 9 o'clock at night. He won a place to study at the Kingston Public Hospital, where he qualified as a pharmacist. He then opened his own pharmacy and continued to save his money so that he could go away to study medicine. In 1895, he qualified to go to Bishop's University in Montreal, Canada, where he did very well in all his courses, coming first in four of them. He graduated with first class honors in 1898. After this, he went to the USA and had a medical practice in Detroit. When the war broke out in Cuba, he joined the U.S. Army and went to Cuba as an army doctor. He was the first, and at that time the only black doctor, serving as an officer with a white regiment in the U.S. Army. After Cuba, he took a post at an army hospital in Puerto Rico. Later, he was offered a permanent post in the U.S. regular army, but he turned down the offer in order to complete his medical studies in Britain. There, at Edinburgh and Glasgow universities, he obtained advanced medical degrees. He then returned to Jamaica to practice as a doctor in his native parish, Manchester. He was elected to the Manchester Parochial Board, like the modern parish council. He represented his church at the deaconess synod. He served as a government medical officer in Manchester and St. Elizabeth. He was appointed a justice of the peace. Now, this is something you perhaps would never know, at least I would never know, if you never read this about the on Dr. Lumsden's page. Because can you imagine a Jamaican black doctor serving in the U.S. Army with an all-white regiment? Isn't that something? Huh. I'm telling you, we're little but we're Talawa. So that is the story on Dr. Robert Stimson. I am very impressed. Okay. This is a footnote on him. Dr. Robert Stimson was a highly qualified doctor and a high principled servant of the public in Jamaica. Now, the next doctor we're going to talk about is Edgar Clark. And he was born on October 15, 1864, and he's son of Mr. Williams Clark, who was for many years a member of the staff of Waterloo House, Kings and Harbour Street, and was also a respected member of Wesley Chapel in Tower Street. So some Kingstonians might know of these people. Now, Dr. Clark, Enos was his first name. He was taught by the Reverend S. Roberts at Calabar and William Peace Esquire at Maiko. After leaving school, he became a volunteer in the telegraph office of the Jamaica Government Railway. Within 6 weeks, he was sending and receiving messages. After his training as a clerk, he became station agent for several stations. His last location was Old Harbour. While working for the railway, he had an experience which was quite dangerous. He was telegraphing at Grange Lane one day when lightning struck the wires and burnt the instrument there and at Spanish Town. After a time, he realized that there was little hope of promotion in the government service, so he resigned and went on a visit to the United States, undecided as to a future career. In the USA, he was attracted to the possibility of dentistry as a profession. And in September of 1886, he entered the Pennsylvania College of Dental Surgery in Philadelphia. He graduated in March of 1888. He returned to Jamaica and started practice in Kingston. His diligence, skill, and kindly courtesy were soon recognized and secured for him a reputation as one of the best dentists in the island. The secret of his success was that he insisted on punctuality and he was methodical. When the government placed dentistry in Jamaica on a properly recognized footing by the passing of the dental law, it honored Dr. Clark by appointing him one of the dental board of examiners. He was also a secretary of the Jamaica Dental Association. He took little active part in public life, devoting himself chiefly to his profession, but he followed current events in the island with interest. He always had a fondness for music and played a little on the violin and clarinet. He took an active part in the music at Wesley Chapel, where for some years he was secretary of the Sunday School and later superintendent. His friends sometimes met him at his residence for musical practice and spent a pleasant evening. And this was based on an article in the Jamaican Times of 1909. And this is how Dr. Lumsden, you know, gathers information about people. And as she read about people and I suppose realize their passion and their drive that caused them to be of service, you know, to the island and to be outstanding. Because, I mean, in those days, for these men to be doing what they did was really remarkably outstanding. And we don't hear or know much about this. Now, the next doctor, this name is very familiar, is Edmund Clark Kincaid. And he was born in Kingston on July 18th, 1873, the eldest of 12 children of Edward Daniel and Urella Clark Kincaid. He was educated at the Collegiate College, then the best school in Kingston, and at a school in England. He worked in the drug department of his father's store in Kingston. A lot of us Kingstonians are very familiar with Kincaid. So now we're learning a little bit about the family. And incidentally, we did a show on the Collegiate College from Dr. Lumsden's research too, and there's some marvelous information about, you know, that early school that is not really listed anywhere. She's the one that collected information from the Gleaner and different at different times and sort of pieced it together. It's not really documented anywhere else that the place even existed. And here again, I want to remind our listeners that you're listening to Backyard Labrish on Blog Talk Radio. We're here each week on a Wednesday at 8 o'clock where we celebrate, enlighten, and preserve the rich, diverse culture of Jamaica, land we love. And the whole objective of this show is to do just what I said, celebrate, enlighten, and preserve. And I'm always anxious to have some participation from my audience, my listening audience. And I invite you to visit our website, which is www.backyardlabrish.com, and send me a comment, leave us a note, and share with us what you'd like to hear that would be along with our theme, Celebrate, Enlighten, and Preserve. I'm always looking for guests who would talk about the past, talk about what may be significant to them when they were growing up. I think of it as leaving a legacy because, you know, you'd be surprised to know some Jamaicans, which for the foreigners that means children born in America of Jamaican parents, and I call them Jabrits. There are a lot of those, and whatever country they were born, they might be curious to know a little bit about what life was like when their elders were growing up, because things are changing all over the world. So I consider this preserving a piece of our past. So do feel free to join the Labrish, and we ask you to share the links with your friends or ask to be added to our mailing list. And we have done several shows that you may be of interest to you. When you find one, just click on it and minimize it as you perhaps go through your email. And if you think your friends would like it, just send the just copy the address bar and send it to them, or invite them to be one of our guests and share with us. So with that said, I'm going to go back to, and I'm sure some people on the board must have been familiar with the Kincaid family or Kincaid store on King Street, because I remember that when I was growing up very, very vividly. Anybody want to share? No. Okay. Well, we're going to be talking about the first woman in this group of men. And we spoke about her already when I was doing something on interesting women, I think. And it's Dr. Cecil Williams, or Cicely Williams. And she was born in 1893 at Kew Park in Darlaston, Westmorland, and was educated in Jamaica, partly at Woolmer's Girls' School. During World War I, in 1914, she started to take first aid and nursing classes and thought seriously about studying medicine. In 1916, after her father's death, she decided to go to Oxford, her father's alma mater. She was one of the women admitted because there were so few male students during the war. I suppose if it wasn't for the war, she perhaps would not have got in. That's my sidebar. After graduation in 1923, she decided to specialize in pediatrics and soon applied to the British Colony Office for an overseas position. She was sent to the Gold Coast, which is now Ghana, in 1929 and spent 7 years there learning to speak Twi, TWI, and working to improve health conditions. She established clinics and hospitals and improved record keeping. She also worked with African herbal doctors to learn their treatments for disease for which European medicine had no cures. Dr. Williams' most important work in Africa was her diagnosis of the common and often fatal condition of, and I cannot pronounce it, so I'll spell it, is K-W-A-S-H-I-O-R-K-O-R. She learned that that condition meant the sickness the older child gets when the next baby is born. This seemed to indicate that when they were no longer breastfed, children were not receiving enough to eat. The cure was therefore education on children's nutritional needs. She quickly published her diagnosis as a protein deficiency disease, which attracted the attention of the medical world. Smart woman. In the late 1930s, she was transferred to Malaysia after suffering from terrible conditions and bad treatment during World War II in Japanese prisoner of war camps, which brought her near to death. She returned to Malaysia and was first woman placed in charge of the maternity and child welfare services. It don't say why she was a prisoner of war. Huh. She campaigned vigorously against the promotion by the milk company of dried and canned milk as a substitute for breastfeeding in third world countries. From the late 1940s to the mid-1960s, she worked first with the World Health Organization, then as a university lecturer in Jamaica, England, and Lebanon. Into her 90s, Dr. Williams remained an active speaker in many countries worldwide on her primary interest of maternal and child health, especially nutrition and breastfeeding, birth control, the training of personnel, and the development of health services. She was also an active member of the Medical Association for the Prevention of War. She died in England in 1992. I thought it was quite interesting. First of all, I don't see any documentation in why she was a prisoner of war, but I suppose since she was in Africa, I don't know if she was captured there or what, but they say here that she almost died because of that treatment. Oh, my goodness. And she did not write about herself. She's one of the many outstanding Jamaican women who have received recognition for their contributions to the world's people. Interesting, very interesting. And again, I want to ask the listeners on the board to chime in whenever they wish by hitting one on your telephone. So, boy, we've had some marvelous people to be born on that island with such drive and passion and tenacity and have shared so much with the world. And now I am hoping that their stories will really be inspiring to a lot of other people. I really do. Young people, young up-and-coming people, whether they're Jamaicans or not, Jamaicans or whoever they are. And I see 718-379 with a hand up, so I want to welcome you to the backyard and ask who I'm speaking to and what would you like to share about our subjects or any subject. Good evening. Welcome to the backyard.
This is Lane, the Bronx, the home of the New York Jets.
Ooh, we have a change in mind.
Yeah, but the Jets are really not from the Bronx.
Oh, they're not.
But they're from New York, and they're in the playoffs.
I got you. All right.
I have a question. This last person, this last doctor, the lady doctor that you mentioned, when was she a prisoner of war? What year?
I don't know. It doesn't say. You know, as I said, these are articles that Dr. Lumsden, you know, finds someplace.
Only because if she was a prisoner of war around the year 1939 or to 45, that's the Second World War. And that would make her an enemy of the Japanese.
Oh.
So I think your original said
1930, she was transferred to Malaysia. After suffering from terrible conditions and bad treatment during World War II.
Ah, yes. So therefore, she was in Japan, you said, right?
Uh-huh.
And then she was a prisoner of war because being a Jamaican, she was British and she's the enemy of the Japanese.
And she was brought to near death.
Yeah, so they put her in a prisoner of war camp.
Camp, wow.
And I just finished watching a series on World War II, and I hate to say it on the air, but those people, meaning the Japanese, were awful to their captors.
Isn't that something?
Yep.
But, you know, there are pictures of her, in her pictures, the pictures that are on the website, she really looks very frail.
Yeah.
She's of light complexion compared to all the others are quite dark. But she looks, you know, when someone just looks frail,
yep.
She doesn't look, what you would say, healthy.
Mm-hmm.
So I now that I read about the prisoner of war thingy, I suppose that was part of it. You know, she was brought near to death. But even after that, you know, she went on to do her thing. Because in the mid-40s, and she lived to be quite old, in her 90s. She was still active in her 90s. And, you know, it's interesting to know that a lot of times when people have gone through a lot, they were able to perhaps be really cruel to her, but they never killed her spirit because she still had a passion for what she did, or she would not have survived and have been able to work until she was so old. Yeah, she died in 1992. You know, that's when she died in England.
Wow.
So, I am, and she's the only woman doctor that's mentioned here in these notable people, or interesting people, as Dr. Lumsden calls them. So, were you familiar with the Kincaids in medicine at any time? Or heard anything about doctors? Was there a Kincaid place on King Street?
I was about to say that the only thing I know about the Kincaids is that restaurant that served the best cocoa in the world.
Right. It used to come in that brass, silver, big silver thing that they put on the machine.
Yeah.
When they pour it in the glass, you get the rest of it. They leave it right beside you.
They better give you the rest.
Yeah, I remember.
I remember it well.
Yes.
I don't know. Of course, it was a huge big family, and they were in different fields. But I think, I know it was a family-owned business. I don't know which of the Kincaids owned the soda fountain.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't know much about the family beyond that.
Well, you know, there were 12 of them. That's 12 Kincaids.
That's what I'm saying.
Yeah.
So,
He was the eldest. And it mentioned here that he went on to work at his father's establishment. So I'm guessing that they had a drug department. Yes,
they did.
Department of his father's store in Kingston. So it's the Kincaid that we know.
Yeah.
Oh, wow. Interesting.
Let's put it this way. It's the family of the Kincaid because this woman is 93 years old, and she goes back to 1890-something, you said?
Uh-huh.
She was born in the 80s, so, you know, they're quite old. I don't know. Well, she died in 1996, you said?
Right. She's not the Kincaid one, you know.
I know.
Edwin was born in 1873.
I'm just trying to tie in the family since you said.
Oh, I got you. Uh-huh.
The father owned it.
Right. His father owned it. Yeah. So it had been owned by the Kincaids apparently for a very long time.
Yes.
And also during our time. Mm-hmm. It was, is it still there?
I don't know.
Oh, okay.
I seldom go down to King Street.
Wow. So now let me tell you about Dr. Albert Forsyth. He was born in Nassau, Bahamas in 1897 and was brought to Port Antonio in Jamaica in his early childhood. His father was a Bahamian and his mother was a Jamaican. And she worked... They worked for the United Fruit Company. Later became well known throughout Jamaica as a civil engineer, architect, and builder, and was considered one of the parish father of Portland. Young Albert thus received his early education in Port Antonio, attending elementary and secondary school there during the time when Major W.H. Plant was headmaster of the Titchfield School. Major Plant later said he had the greatest pleasure in training Albert and helping to shape him for his life's work. I just want to make a sidebar here, Lee, and in all of these articles, it mentioned who was the trainer of these people. And I really take that as pointing out the importance of teachers in children's lives. Because, you know, I know that there are so many challenges with the teaching profession now, and I suppose all over the world, where they're really not as recognized or perhaps not as well paid as they need to be. But at the same time, I hope that they continue to understand how important they are in molding the future, because the kids that pass through their hands are the tomorrow, you know, the citizens of tomorrow. So they play an important part on how those children are molded. Because here, every one of these articles, it was noted, and I believe the reason being that perhaps those people took some special interest in these children.
Yes, well,
when they were children, of course.
You know, the school system, the way we knew it, the teacher would take a special interest in outstanding or promising students,
right,
and give them encouragement and even sometimes monetary support if they wanted to, if they needed to buy books and all like that. This, especially in the rural areas.
Mm-hmm.
And they would be a mentor to these children, to these youngsters, so that later on they would get credit. It's almost like you, when you are confirmed, you have a sponsor.
Mm-hmm.
And in a lot of the cases, when they went on to higher education, meaning college and on, they would need recommendations from their primary teachers. So that was the system then. I don't know what they do now.
Me too. But I'm hoping that teachers everywhere will realize their importance. And even though they might not be getting paid for the job, what they deserve, they know that the kids deserve their best. So let's read a little bit more about Mr. Forsythe. The young Forsythe left the island in 1911 to continue his education, first at the Tuskegee Institute and later at the University of Illinois and Toledo in the United States, where he graduated with the degree of Bachelor of Science. A year later, he began his study of medicine at McGill University in Canada, graduated in 1930 with the degree of Doctor of Medicine and Doctor of Surgery. Dr. Forsythe started his medical practice in Atlantic City, where he met C. Alfred Chef, C-H-I-E-F, Anderson in 1932. Soon after, Anderson had received his commercial and air transport pilot license, the first black American to do so. The two became close friends, and Forsythe soon received his private pilot license. In July of 1933, Anderson and Forsythe completed a flight from Atlantic City to Los Angeles and back. Their Fairfield 24, the pride of Atlantic City, had no parachute, no landing lights, no radio or blind flying instructions, and much of their navigation was accomplished using a road map. This was the first such transcontinental flight by black aviators. Is that something?
Mad Jamaicans.
That was something
else. A road map.
A road map. That I thought that was hysterical.
Sorry.
Oh, my God. In 1934, the two pilots planned a goodwill tour of the Caribbean and South America, the first black pilots to undertake such a flight. After extensive planning and with financial and moral support from black Americans, the two set off from Atlantic City in the plane they had named Booker T. Washington. In the early morning of November 8, after touching down twice in the USA, they reached Nassau, their first Caribbean destination. In the late afternoon of November 9, they received an enthusiastic reception, then flew on to Cuba and then to Jamaica, where again there was a great reception. The rest of the tour took them to Haiti, the Dominican Republic, Puerto Rico, and down through the Lesser Antilles to Grenada. In spite of some problems, their tour had gone well. But when they flew into Trinidad, their luck ran out. After another enthusiastic welcome, they prepared to fly on to British Guyana. But immediately after takeoff, the Booker T. Washington crashed in someone's backyard. They flew on to Georgetown in a Pan American flying boat to fulfill a commitment there. But the tour was over and they returned to the U.S. by sea at the end of December. They had visited 10 of the 25 countries they had hoped to visit, covering a quarter of the distance they had hoped to fly. In spite of its premature end, the successes of the tour had been spectacular, involving several aviation flights in the Caribbean. After this, Dr. Forsythe gave up flying, but Al Chef Anderson went on to a great career as a flying instructor, especially to the Tuskegee Airmen. Dr. Forsythe practiced medicine in New Jersey until 1978, and he was active in the civil rights movement and died in 1986, having lived to see increasing recognition of their aviation achievement. Isn't that something? I'm telling you. So it goes on to say, Albert E. Forsythe, who was born in Nassau. Yeah, well, I did that already. I thought that was quite interesting. So here we had a doctor who was an horticulturist. You know, he was into plants and won a whole lot of medals for that. And now we have this one who is just had a love for flying. So I thought it was really, really interesting to just read about these people. So the last person, doctor, I'm going to read about, let me see how much time we have left. And I want to remind our listeners that you're listening to Backyard Labrish on Blog Talk Radio. We're here each Wednesday at 8 o'clock, where we celebrate, enlighten, and preserve the rich, diverse culture of Jamaica, land we love. And we'd love to have you join the Labrish. So if you come by later and listen to our show, let us know what you'd like to hear and come join us live. If you are here with us and would like to interact, just hit 1 on your telephone, and I'll be happy to open up the mic and welcome you to the world. So we're going to talk about our last doctor that Dr. Lumsden is mentioning on her page. And she goes on to say, you know, if there are other people know about other people during that period she's writing about, she'd be more than happy to entertain them. So like me, she's always seeking for interesting information. So let's talk about Anthan, A-N-T-H-A-N. Anthan Francis Berry was a Jamaican who won for himself a place as a successful druggist. He was the second son of Mr. Henry Bailey Berry and his wife, Caroline Berry, of Porus, Manchester, who was respected for their diligence and uprightness in their agricultural pursuits. He was educated at St. Augustine's Church of England School, where his teacher was Mr. S.C. Thompson, later president of the Jamaica Union of Teachers in 1912. He showed special aptitude for mathematics, and Mr. Thompson was very favorably impressed by the young scholar's ability and character. After leaving school, he studied under Dr. R.M. Stimson, we know that man, who had a high opinion of the young student. He passed his examination and qualified as a dispenser in March of 1905 after 2.5 years. In June that year, he started business at Albertown, Trelawney. Later, he moved to St. Elizabeth and in October of 1906, opened up a people's dispensary at Balaclava. There, he built up a fine trade in drugs and groceries, based on his sterling business ability and unfailing courtesy. He later opened a branch at Santa Cruz where there was great need for a dispensary. Mr. Berry was always interested in books, particularly histories, and was an ardent newspaper reader. His interest in public affairs was strong and keen. He had strong opinions on the need to sell crown lands and raise the minimum wage in order to encourage agriculture and reduce the number of young Jamaicans immigrating to find work abroad. He also had strong views on the legal status of druggists, which he felt was not adequately protected by the existing laws. He strongly advocated the formation of a druggist association. So that was all she had on that druggist. But you remember when, of course, it's not politically correct to talk about a druggist now or to talk about drugs like that, because it could be misconstrued to mean something else. You know, he specialized in drugs. But in the old days, we had the drugstores. Remember that, Leigh?
You bet.
And we were going to the drugstores to buy some drugs.
Yep.
Well, we don't do that anymore, do we? We order our prescriptions from the pharmacy.
Right.
And the word drugs are only mentioned when it is something illegal.
Political.
So talking about how language or the meaning of words change over periods of time, you remember when we had articles that was written in Old English, how weird it sounded to people, it was even difficult to read. So you can imagine the generation that's growing up now who never perhaps will ever hear of a building calling a drug store. You understand what I mean? So can you imagine how weird it
would
hear
be? It would mean something much different to them.
Right. No, this building used to be a drug store, and their mind could not wrap, you know, they couldn't wrap their minds about that being a place of legal business. So it's just interesting how times change, language change, opinions change, styles change, you know, and people change. So with that said, I just really, I don't know about the other listeners, but I really, really enjoy researching about these remarkable people and sometimes wonder what it really took for them to achieve their dreams. And, you know, I don't think it was just a bed of roses and it was all that easy, because, as I mentioned, even traveling from Jamaica to Canada in those days, they didn't have jets. I don't even know if they had planes that flew commercial. You know what I mean, Leigh? So everybody would be boating it, getting on the ship. And the ships were not as luxurious as they are now, far from it. So just getting from one place to another to pursue your dreams could be a very difficult thing that would take a long time and a lot of planning, and I'm sure at that time perhaps a lot of money. But against all odds, these people got there, excelled in what they did, and most of them, you know, returned to the island or wherever they went in the world. They contributed something to humanity. So I just want to celebrate that and to really, really ask our listeners, you know, to take all these stories from the past to heart and really use it as we reflect to encourage and support the next generation, because that and them are the future of the world. And the more encouragement we can do, whatever we can do to help them be the best that they can be, you know, we're leaving a part of ourselves on the planet. And that, at least that's the way I look at it. So I'm hoping that listeners will find these stories from the past interesting, and we'll want to perhaps recommend them for other people to listen to or pass them on to somebody else. I know that I've gotten a lot of nurturing and fulfillment, and I feel that as a Jamaican, I understand myself better. I understand my culture better since I'm doing this research. And, you know, you find out, like, what all that we found out about how the celebration, this 1 week of celebration that we usually have in Jamaica approaching Christmas and over the holidays, how important that holiday has always been. And by the research, we find out why. And it just makes a lot of sense. You know what I'm driving at, Leigh?
Right.
Because I always, as I said before, you know, I was sort of a little shocked when I came here and realized Christmas was just one day, and I wondered what was wrong with these people, or is there something wrong with us?
Well, I know of a lot of people that came here at Christmas time, in December, you know, and returned to Jamaica and never came back because they were homesick. I mean, this
where
is
did
the
Christmas go?
This is the truth.
Yeah, I know what you mean. But now we know why it is so embedded in us, because it was coming way back. It's almost like it's in the genes.
Yeah.
And you feel, you know, there's a yearning if you don't have it. So it was quite interesting to discover, you know, all of that. So with that said, I want to thank all our listeners online, those who may come by later on, and thank you for your support, thank you for your interest, and ask you if you want to participate, do let us know. The Elaborish is just what it says. We want some interaction. But we know that you're listening to the shows, and we really appreciate everybody that come by now and later. And I see a raised hand, so I'm going to be opening up the mic. I cannot say the number because it looked like a Skyped-in number. It's all ones. It's 111-111-111. But the mic is open, so whoever is wanting to talk, do say hello. This is Margaret. Welcome to the backyard.
And good evening to you, Miss Marshall.
Good evening. Who do I have?
This is Sharon Hamilton Pearson.
Sharon, welcome. Welcome.
Welcome. I just want to say thank you so much for your email reminders. It came very timely this evening. I was able to jump onto the computer and listen to your fabulous show. I want to just wish all of the Blog Talk listeners and participators a very, very happy new year when it comes.
Well, thank you so much. That's so nice of you to call in. And we miss you, so come by often.
Absolutely will do. I've just been really busy, but I'm so glad that you're still providing this wonderful service. And, you know, we just keep promoting it all the time because it really is a gem.
Thank you so much,
I want to wish you all the best, too. And I'm going to, when the show ends, I'm going to go and listen to your greeting card, which you're just so fabulous.
Well, thank you so much. I'm having a ball. I'm really enjoying what I do, and I have so much joy from sharing. And I really, really enjoy I appreciate all the historians that is supplying this material. I really, really want to celebrate them, too. And I see someone else at 973-373 that has raised the hand. So welcome to the backyard. This is Margaret. Who do I have? Hello? 973-373, you're online. You're open. So if you do want to talk to me, your mic is open now. Sometimes people hit one accidentally and they don't really want to talk. But if you are calling from 973-373, I won't call the rest of the numbers out. But you know who you are, and if you do want to join the Labrish, please do so.
I think that person was snowed out.
Oh, really? Where's 973 area code?
Well, it could be anywhere. It could even be Buffalo.
Oh, I see. Well, welcome anyhow, and we're happy you're here, and thank everybody who called in and who's listening online. And as Sharon said, I just wish you all a wonderful new year. I hope that all your dreams come true, that you remain healthy, remain happy, and your cup of joy be running over into your neighborhoods and lighting up the rest of the world, because that's why we're here, to spread some joy.
We are texting over.
Pardon? So be well,
young lady.
Fun, and just keep coming back. Do I have 973-373 now?
Monsieur.
Hello.
Monsieur, don't be giving out dog Puss and Harry that number now.
That's Molly.
I didn't say that, Monsieur.
Molly?
All right, so apparently that person must have hit their number accidentally. So I've closed the mic. So now I'm going to say goodnight to my callers. And I want you to all join me, as I say, here in the backyard. We are here to celebrate, enlighten, and preserve the rich, diverse culture of Jamaica. All together now, land we
love.
Where's my support team?
One more time.
We are here to celebrate, enlighten, and preserve the rich, diverse culture of Jamaica. Land we love. All right. So go spread some joy, have some fun, and have a wonderful first.
Happy New
and
Year.
Make it the first of many, many, many
to come. Absolutely.
Good night.
Hi,
see you next year. God bless.
All right. See you next year.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
And thanks for being here.